The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Last program of a fast-moving week. We have a lot to get to on today's show. Quick update on the PAX coming up for Belfast toward the end of February. We have 67 people registered thus far. And for Birmingham, that's coming up next weekend. So we're just a little over a week away for the Saturday night and then Sunday afternoon PAX event. In the heart of Birmingham, pretty close to the Birmingham airport. We have 113 registered for the first night and then 119 for the second night. So we're excited to be off and running with another round of PAX here in just a few days. On today's show, we're going to give you an update later on the Brexit. That will be in motion a week from now. As well, finally, after a long and bitter, bitter divorce proceeding, the break is upon us. And also, if we have some time, we'll see how it goes. We've got some more listener feedback to give you at the end of the show. Well, last night we had our second book club. Those are posted, by the way, at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show page on the website, thetrumpet.com. And one thing that certainly stands out anytime you study Abraham Lincoln is you see I got through the section just a few days ago, a pretty lengthy section on some fairly tedious details about some of the court cases he was involved in as a lawyer. But one thing that you saw over and again in studying that time period of his life was just how honest he was and how that he wasn't trying to just get every single penny out of people that he could. A lot of times he'd give money back if he felt like it was too much or he was overpaid. But he was an honest individual. He picked up that nickname. Lincoln said, "The fact is, truth is your truest friend, no matter what the circumstances are. Truth is your best friend." He says another gem of his, "Truth is generally the best vindication against slander." I was telling the club last week that he picked up the reputation as a lawyer as being fair and square. Fair and square. He was honest. He was a truth teller. And then even when he was a politician, there's an example in Sandberg's book about how that, I think this was when he was first running for U.S. Congress, the Republican Party, or I guess it would have been the Whig Party at the time, what became the Republican Party, they gave him $200 for his campaign for Congress, and after he won the election, he gave $199.25 back to the Republican Party. He spent 75 cents. Of the money that was allocated for his campaign. And when asked, "Well, why didn't you use it?" He said, "Well, I didn't need it. I was able to do everything on my own." That's pretty unique as far as politicians are concerned. There's another example with respect to his career as a lawyer. He helped to collect $600, a $600 fee for a client, and he charged the client, after it was all said and done, $3.50 for his services. That's a pretty good rate, considering his client took in $600, which was quite a lot back then in the 1850s, and he charged $3.50. Now, you compare these examples, with what we routinely see in government today. Just yesterday, we learned that at least the Justice Department is working to clean things up. The FBI, the FISA court, this ruling from the FISA court, or I guess it wasn't a ruling, it was a judicial order from January the 7th, stating that there was insufficient predication to establish probable cause to believe that Carter Page was acting as an agent of a foreign power. In other words, respecting those last two FISA warrants obtained by the Obama people, they were obtained fraudulently. There was no reason to get those last two warrants. That's what the DOJ and the FISA court is now saying. It says here, this is from the Wall Street Journal, those warrants were based in major part on false information ginned up by Christopher Steele, who was financed by Democrats. It says Judge Boasberg's order says justice doesn't take a position on the other two FISA warrants on Mr. Page. But from what we've read, that's even being looked into as well. The first two, there were four, if you remember. In any event, the third and the fourth, now the judges themselves are ruling. It never should have happened. They never should have been given. It says in the journal, recall that the fourth warrant was approved in June 2017 after Robert Mueller was named special counsel. That could affect the legality of information he collected under the order and may have used in prosecutions. So you know what happened with the Mueller team, the investigation, the 32 months investigation. And if they're collecting all this evidence, the way they viewed it, as a result of that fourth warrant, it was all done fraudulently, illegally. That's what they're saying here. Recall, too, it says, the media sneers at anyone who questioned the provenance of the warrants. Anybody who questioned that, why, of course it was approved. You have to understand the rigorous process that we go through to obtain a warrant. You remember Rosenstein making statements similar to that. But then go back to the president himself, that tweet, perhaps his best known and most criticized tweet from early on in his presidency, March 2017. Donald Trump said, how low has President Obama gone to tap my phones during the very sacred election process? During an election, tampering with an election, interfering with an election. How low can they go? President Trump said, this is Nixon Watergate. This is a bad or a sick guy, referring to the Obama team, referring to the Obama officials. He tweeted out yesterday this image, by the way, of President Trump leaning against the wall by a window. And then the former President Barack Obama peering into the window using binoculars and a listening device. And of course, the internet just exploded over that one. But he was right. And now he's, of course, having some fun with it and mocking the Obama people. But he said they were spying on me. And you remember how they reacted, the media and the Democrats, back in March of 2017. Oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. Look at how James Clapper rose in defense of the Obama team as soon as President Trump made that charge in March of 2017. Clip one.
For the part of the national security apparatus that I oversaw as DNI, there was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time, or as a candidate, or against his campaign. I can't speak for other Title III mm-hmm. authorized entities in the government or a state or local entity.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if the FBI, for instance, had a FISA court order of some sort for a surveillance, would that be information you would know or not know?
Yes.
You would be told this.
I would know that.
If there was a FISA court order yes. on something like this.
Something like this, absolutely.
And at this point, you can't confirm or deny whether that exists?
I can deny it.
There is no FISA court order.
Not to my knowledge.
That's Jim Clapper in March of 2017. A complete and total lie. He denied it. No FISA warrants, no spying on President Trump or his campaign, he said. And, oh, he would know about it. If there's a FISA application, wouldn't you know about it? Oh, I sure would. Can you confirm or deny? I can deny it. Never happened. And step back for a moment and consider what the Democrats have tried to teach us this week. That if you dare suggest that a political opponent be investigated, that is an impeachable offense. The mere suggestion from Donald Trump that Joe Biden ought to be investigated, that is an impeachable offense. Now, Obama investigates, spies on, indicts, prosecutes all of his political opponents during and after his presidency. And no one's penalized, at least not yet. President Trump suggested that Joe Biden be investigated, and he's impeached. He's impeached, and the Democrats this week, they're saying he should be convicted and removed from the White House for it. In the New York Times today, writing on the impeachment trial, it says, the team of seven Democratic impeachment managers repeatedly attacked the idea that when the president withheld military aid from Ukraine and sought to secure a promise to investigate Joseph Biden, he was merely making a foreign policy decision to root out corruption in Ukraine. That's the New York Times take on the proceedings this week. Now, with respect to withholding aid to Ukraine, again, step back and look at the larger view here, the larger picture. Obama refuses to give military aid to Ukraine for 3 years, while Russia is just steamrolling its way through Crimea. Obama doesn't give Ukraine any military aid. He doesn't want to upset Vladimir Putin. President Trump, after 2 years of giving Ukraine military aid, then a new president comes in. President Trump withholds it for 55 days just to make sure everything's on the up and up, just to make sure that he can trust this new administration with this kind of money, $391 million. He withholds it for 55 days. Then they go ahead and get it, Ukraine does. They get the javelins that they need to take out Russian tanks. They get the military aid. And Donald Trump's impeached for it. And the Democrats tell us this week he should be removed from office as well. You can see how the system is rigged against Donald Trump and his associates. This New York Times piece, it says, Mr. Trump has consistently suggested, without any evidence, think about that, Mr. Trump's suggested without any evidence that Mr. Biden pushed to remove a Ukrainian prosecutor who is investigating Burisma. And the thing of it is, Joe Biden's on video admitting that. We just passed the 2-year anniversary the other day. He's on video admitting it. I pushed to get that guy fired. I withheld $1 billion in loan guarantees. He's right there on video saying it, bragging about it. And here's the New York Times spin. Mr. Trump has consistently suggested without any evidence, no evidence. It's right there in plain view. Anyone can see it. So here's Joe Biden admitting he got the prosecutor fired by threatening to withhold that money. And sure enough, he was fired. And the case against Burisma was dropped. Everything that Biden and Obama wanted, all the pressure they applied, it worked just fine. Listen to Lindsey Graham yesterday. And by the way, even in that New York Times piece, they admitted that the Democrats this week have made a, uh, or have have made a strategic risk or taken a strategic risk, I guess, by focusing as much as they have on the Bidens and how that they shouldn't be investigated. And by doing that, there's quite a few from Trump's legal counsel that have said they're making the Bidens part of this inquiry. They're making the Bidens part of the investigation. Here's Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator, yesterday talking about the case that there is against the Bidens and all of this nefarious activity. Clip two.
But as to the Bidens, I can promise you no one has looked at whether or not there was a conflict of interest, and no one has taken the time to explain how Hunter Biden got rich in the Ukraine and his father didn't know anything about it. Nobody has looked at whether or not when the prosecutor was fired, the next prosecutor refused, dropped the case on Burisma. Somebody needs to look at it. As much as I like Joe Biden, if it were Lindsey Graham or Mike Pence or Donald Trump, you would be looking.
Is Joe Biden corrupt? Is
Joe Biden corrupt? No, I don't think Joe Biden's corrupt, but I don't think he's beyond being looked at.
This is a close friend of Joe Biden, in a lot of ways defending him. I don't think he's corrupt, but at least it needs to be looked into. A son getting all of that money, $1 million a year for doing nothing? He went on to say, Lindsey Graham did, that look, I'm not going to just sit on the sidelines and watch only the Trump family be investigated. And that's what's happening. That's the way that it works. But here come the Democrats this week, and now they've opened the door on the Bidens, as Andy McCarthy said the other day. So again, in stepping back, Team Obama and Clinton, they're free, totally free to launch fraudulent investigations into the Trump campaign based on these imaginative lies coming from the Steele dossier, Clinton-funded dossier, political opponents targeting them. And President Trump makes the mere suggestion. But look at these, all of these lies that are being exposed. I didn't have time to get to this earlier in the week. I think this story broke Monday or Tuesday, this Politico piece. Coming into the impeachment trial, you had Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff all talking about, well, since the investigation ended in the House, we've had all of this new evidence. Lev Parnas, they mentioned him. They've talked about text messages. This is from Politico earlier this week. It says, House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff appears to have mischaracterized a text message exchanged between two players in the Ukraine saga, according to documents obtained by Politico, a possible error that the GOP will likely criticize as another example of the Democrats' rushed effort to impeach President Trump. That's how Politico softens it to help benefit Mr. Schiff. It's a possible error, and oh, the story here is that the GOP is surely going to criticize him for this. It says the issue arose. Listen to this. Listen to the details of this. The issue arose when Schiff sent a letter to House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler last week, summarizing a trove of evidence from Lev Parnas, an indicted former associate of Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. It says, in one section of the letter, Schiff claims that Parnas continued to try to arrange a meeting with President Zelensky, citing a specific text message exchange where Parnas tells Giuliani, trying to get us Mr. Z. The remainder of the exchange, which was attached to Schiff's letter, was redacted. So Schiff sends a letter to Nadler. He's trying to show how there was this connection with President Zelensky from Giuliani and his people, Lev Parnas at the time. And we're trying to get to Mr. Z, it says. Politico writes, but an unredacted version of the exchange shows that several days later, Parnas sent Giuliani a Word document that appears to show notes from an interview with Mykola Zlochevsky, the founder of Burisma, followed by a text message to Giuliani that states, "Mr. Z answers my brother." This suggests that Parnas was referring to Zlochevsky, not Zelensky. So it wasn't referring to President Zelensky, but you'd never know it if you just take what Adam Schiff hands you, because he's got the relevant or the most important part of the exchange redacted. It's blacked out. You can't see it. Politico calls this an error that might draw some criticism. That's the way that it's reported. Now, if you remember, going back to the House investigation, Adam Schiff, as the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, he kicked off the hearing by telling the world, this is what, in essence, Donald Trump said to Mr. Zelensky over the phone. Now, the transcript of the phone call is out there for the whole world to see, right? Even still, Schiff takes it upon himself to give what he views as the essence of the call. He said, in quoting Trump, "I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent. Understand? Lots of it. I want you to dig up lots of dirt on my political opponent." Now the Republicans immediately called him to task on that. And then he tried to back away from it, saying it was a parody and whatever else. These are the things they get away with over and again. These sort of parodies, these errors, these mistakes. Earlier this week, Joe Lockhart, he works for CNN. He used to work for the Clinton team. And as soon as the hearing started, I don't know if this is from Tuesday or Wednesday, but he tweets out this message about the impeachment trial, and it says, "Overheard convo between two Republican senators who only watch Fox News. Is this stuff real? I haven't heard any of this before. I thought it was all about a server. If half the stuff Schiff is saying is true, we are up a creek." This is a conversation he supposedly overheard. "I hope the White House has exculpatory evidence." Well, we came to find out just a little while after that tweet that conversation that supposedly happened between two Republicans, it never happened. He made it up. The CNN analyst made it up. The former Clinton advisor made it up. And he followed up with a tweet that said, "Okay, maybe I made up the convo, but you know that's exactly what they were thinking." They're able to divine it, you see. They can read the minds. They know that even if the facts, even if the evidence isn't there, even if they didn't state it directly, that's what they mean. That's what Adam Schiff was saying during the trial in December. Well, that's what he means by this phone call. And the Trump team says, "Well, why don't you quote the script? Why don't you quote from the phone call itself if it's so condemning?" No one does it. They're happy to paraphrase, or they're happy to tweet about fake conversations that never happened, and they get away with it. The media let them. Here's Lindsey Graham, his advice to the president on working with these people. They're demanding, keep in mind, more witnesses. They've got to hear from Bolton. They've got to hear from Mulvaney. They've got to have more, even though they've got overwhelming evidence, as they said coming in, they've got to have more. And if they don't get more evidence in there, if they don't get more witnesses, then it's not fair. Here's Lindsey Graham's advice to the president, clip 3.
"If I were the president, I wouldn't cooperate with these guys at all. I'm the same guy that said, you can't fire Mueller. I encouraged him to work with Mueller. Mueller is a man of the law. Schiff, Nadler, and Pelosi impeached this president in 48 days. I wouldn't give them the time of day. They're on a crusade to destroy this man. And they don't care what they destroy in the process of trying to destroy Donald Trump."
The crusade is to destroy the president. And the media love the crusade. The media think that Schiff and Nadler and Pelosi are heroes. Listen to the way, this is a montage put together by Grabian. Listen to the way they reacted to Adam Schiff and his opening comments the other day, clip four.
What did you think of the presentation by the lead House manager, Adam Schiff?
I thought it was dazzling.
By most accounts, it was a virtuoso performance that drew praise from all sides yesterday.
I thought this was the most compelling case for removal from office of this president I had heard in all these months, because it was real and it was powerful and it was important.
He was speaking not just to the 100 people in the room. He was speaking to 100 years in the future. This is a speech that kids are going to be given in 2060 at, you know, at university projects and things like that.
Adam Schiff did an incredible job. Mm-hmm. This is how you do it.
You know, this is really a I am Spartacus moment.
It was a very coherent, cohesive narrative.
A very, very powerful and forceful speech.
I mean, his mastery of this material is really formidable.
And he invoked the founding fathers and their words a lot. Schiff quoted Hamilton so many times today, he was nominated for 5 Tony Awards.
But I think he did something else. And I think our friend John Meacham would call it calling on our better angels.
This was a speech really aimed at the better angels.
I have heard from a number of Republicans who've been impressed by Schiff's mastery of this material and his ability to weave it all together.
I thought the way he wove through both the facts of the case and the historical context was really remarkable.
It was a stunning recitation of the facts that weave together constitutional framing, American history, and Donald Trump's laundry list of abuses of power and obstruction of Congress.
This is the primary mover and shaker of the Russia collusion hoax. He said he had all the evidence. He had seen it. He had the goods. He saw the same evidence that Devin Nunes did, and Nunes sounded the alarm. No one believed him. FISA court didn't believe him. The media didn't believe him. Schiff comes out with his memo in response. Lies repeatedly in the memo. Then he lies later with the start of the investigation in the House. And he lied this week when he sent supposedly new evidence to Jerry Nadler. And yet there's the media anointing him as a modern-day Cicero. Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post, she said that he delivered the most brilliant legal presentation I have heard. None comes close. The tone, the facts, the anticipated defenses. I am in awe, she said. They're in awe. The National Review brought out how that when he speaks, Adam Schiff, when he speaks, he's not talking to ordinary Americans. He's not speaking to the Senate, certainly not the Republicans. He's not speaking to the Trump legal team. He's speaking to MSNBC and CNN. He's speaking to the left-wing media. He's addressing his adoring fans in the media. The same people, National Review says, who spent years passing along every falsehood and selective leak the California congressman gave them to fuel the Russia collusion hysteria. And the same people who still accept his allegations, knowing his long history of fabrications, without much skepticism, spent yesterday pretending that Schiff was a modern-day Cicero. Here are the pundits just fawning all over him. Well, let me just play, to take you back in time a few years. This is a Democrat. He's still in the Senate, Chuck Schumer. He's talking about the Bill Clinton impeachment in 1998, where there were, by the way, 11 charges, felonies, and quite a few actions that were taken in the fallout from that impeachment. He lost his law license. He had a settlement with Paula Jones. He had to apologize to her or else be prosecuted. In other words, there was a lot of illegal, immoral behavior going on a lot of impeachable offenses, so very, very different from today. But nevertheless, here's Chuck Schumer defending Bill Clinton, and he says some things about the impeachment process. Listen to this, clip five.
I expect history will show that we've lowered the bar on impeachment so much. We have broken the seal on this extreme penalty so cavalierly that it will be used as a routine tool to fight political battles. My fear is that when a Republican wins the White House, Democrats will demand payback.
And really, you know, it's so much worse than payback. It's an audacious and unconstitutional attack or attempt to overturn not one, but two elections. They're already laying the groundwork to make sure you know 2020 is illegitimate as well. I mentioned that the other day. And really, when you listen to them talk, the radical left, they talk about Russians interfering with the election in 2016. They talk about Ukraine interfering in the upcoming election, the 2020 election. But it's not Russian or Ukrainian interference that really and truly bothers them. It's ordinary Americans who are interfering with their election plans. Americans aren't supposed to vote for someone outside the establishment. Americans aren't supposed to vote for someone like Donald Trump. Certainly not twice. That just can't happen. So they're doing everything in their power outside of the election to stop him. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Earlier today, Boris Johnson's Brexit bill was signed by the European Commission. And so it's on its way back to the UK to be signed by Boris Johnson. It's already been voted on in Parliament. It's been granted royal assent by the Queen. And so what it means is that it's a done deal. We're coming up to January 31st, a week from today. And after that, Britain will be not on the way out. Britain will be out. Now, you've heard us talk so many times before about what Herbert Armstrong said about Britain's entrance into the European Union or the European Community, as it was called back in 1973. He said Britain would look back on it as a most tragically historic date, a date fraught with ominous potentialities. That was in 73. And today, almost 50 years later, and after 3.5 years of contentious debates and fighting, really, over how to leave, Britain is now leaving the European Union. Pretty dramatic development. Well, even before 1973, Herbert Armstrong in 1956, he said, the stage is all set. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Probably Germany will lead the dramatic, sorry, will lead and dominate the coming United States of Europe, but Britain will be no part of it. Britain's not going to be a part of it, he said in 1956. And then when they went in 1973, he said, it's a mistake and they're going to regret it. He says Britain's entry into the European community portends a tragic situation. Today, we have witnessed that tragedy. We've witnessed it over the last several years. And we've now seen the fulfillment of Mr. Armstrong's biblically based prophecy. We've seen it happen. Britain came face to face with the choice, the difficult choice of whether to stay in or to divorce. And just as was prophesied, they divorced. I want to take you through Hosea 5. As so many of you know, Hosea is addressed to the people of Ephraim. Quite a few verses in this book discuss Ephraim, and of course I'll leave it to you to study the U.S. and Britain in prophecy to see what Mr. Armstrong wrote there or taught about the descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh today, the United States and Britain in prophecy. But let's just pick it up here in Hosea 5 and verse 1. It says, hear you this, O priests, and hearken, you house of Israel, and give ear, O house of the king. Pay attention, even the king's house, the monarchy. Listen up, God says. For judgment is toward you, because you have been a snare on Mizpah and a net spread upon Tabor. Mizpah means sanctuary, pillar, or watchtower. That's what the religious leaders of our nations should be. They should be watching. They should be up there telling the truth. But they won't listen. The leaders won't. And the people are blinded. They don't have the leadership like they had in the 1940s when a political watchman had the courage to tell the truth, even when it made him very unpopular. Verse 2, it says, and the revolters are profound to make slaughter, though I have been a rebuker of them all. I know Ephraim and Israel is not hid from me. For now, O Ephraim, you commit whoredom, and Israel is defiled. So God here at the start of this chapter, he's putting the blame right where it belongs, on the leadership, the leaders, the ministers, the clergy, the royal family even. He sees what's happening. He sees what's going on. There may be a temporary resurgence associated with the break, with the divorce. But you scratch beneath the surface, or as it says later in this chapter, if you pull the garment out of the closet, it may look nice on the outside, but on the inside it's moth-eaten. There's no substance. Verse 4, it says, they will not frame their doings to turn unto their God, for the spirit of whoredoms is in the midst of them, and they have not known the Eternal, for the pride of Israel does testify to his face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. Yesterday I played that segment on sudden destruction, just how suddenly that fall will come. Verse 6, it says, they shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek the Eternal, but they shall not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously against the Eternal. for they have begotten strange children. Now shall a month devour them with their portions. It's a devouring. In just 1 month's time, verse 7 says, verse 8, blow the cornet in Gibeah and the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Aven after you, O Benjamin. So there is a trumpet blowing work. There always is with God. He is warning. He's putting the message out there. Few people are listening. But that doesn't discourage the work of God. It didn't discourage Winston Churchill in the 1930s when he was in the wilderness, as I discussed with you earlier this week. He was hard at work. He was preparing for war, just like Germany was. He was preparing to lead in war. He was digging into history. He was working to understand the grand sweep of history. Verse 9, it says, Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel have I made known that which shall surely be. So here's God prophesying of Ephraim's downfall. Verse 11, Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment. And the meaning there is the commandment of Jeroboam, as my father has explained before. The Jeroboam who anciently accepted or practiced all of those religious, those seemingly religious holidays, even as he rejected God's holy days. Verse 12, it says, therefore will I be unto Ephraim as a moth, and to the house of Judah as rottenness. See, like I said earlier, it's like a moth-eaten garment that looks good on the outside. It looks good while it's hanging in the closet, but just take it off the hanger and see what happens. It falls apart. In my father's booklet, the Hosea booklet, it says, people only see prosperity, glitter, and glamour. Most people today are only living for the next exciting entertainment. Even though the signs of disaster are there, our nations are refusing to see the moths and worms in our society. There's not much substance left to hold our nations together because of our many sins. You see, without the substance, what happens is a sudden collapse. It all happens suddenly, just like those scriptures I gave to you yesterday, Old Testament and New. Paul said it comes like a thief in the night. Jesus talked about the suddenness of that collapse. Verse 13, it says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jareb, yet could he not heal you nor cure you of your wound. See, the sickness, Isaiah 1 talks about the sickness from head to toe. The sickness that sets in, it's going to be so destructive, it's going to be so debilitating that Judah, Ephraim, they're going to turn to the Assyrians for help, for strength. And of course, that's a huge mistake. The Hosea book says, after they conquer the mighty king of the south, the world is going to tremble and the Germans are going to feel invincible. It says the Germans will undoubtedly be invited in to keep the peace. Then the European Union is going to suddenly attack and destroy America, Britain, and Judah at the same time. It's going to be a sudden attack that takes down or brings down all three nations simultaneously, all together. Even after this long and storied history, this illustrious history that our nations have had, going back over the past 2.5 centuries or so, Great Britain, William Manchester said, the empire, back in the 1800s, it was the workshop of the world. This all was in fulfillment of promises God made to the great patriarch Abraham. Genesis 35 talks about a nation and a company of nations coming from Abraham's line, an astounding prophecy fulfilled in the people of Ephraim and Manasseh. Mr. Armstrong said in 1980, the United States became the one promised great nation. Britain became the great commonwealth of nations. Neither Britain nor America deserved the unprecedented wealth, greatness, and national power of Abraham's birthright. But God had promised it unconditionally to Abraham. It was conditional to ancient Israel. But for our descendants, or rather today's descendants, it was unconditional. Thing is, of course, as Mr. Armstrong explains, it's all been distributed. Those blessings for Abraham's obedience, and as he explains in the U.S. and Britain, now it's incumbent upon us to hold on to those blessings. This is the truth that both sides need. The conservative right, the radical left, everybody in between. This is what's coming upon our nations. Hosea 2 and verse 8, just a few pages back, it says, for she did not, this is again speaking of Ephraim, she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. All of those blessings, all of that power, all of that wealth, all in fulfillment of promises God made to Abraham. But what have we done with them? Verse 9, it says, therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and I will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness, and now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. You look at what's happened to our people, our nations, our leaders, our governments. William Manchester, when he was writing about Great Britain in the early 1900s, this is the first decade of the 1900s, so a little over 100 years ago, he's writing about the Edwardian era. And for even that period, Manchester says the solid core of agreed religious belief was gone. The Bible had lost its grip on Englishmen. People were groping for a substitute. The new vogues were popular psychology, pragmatism, and Nietzscheanism. Those are the movements that replaced God himself. The people, you see, they lost that common bond. They lost that solid core of agreed religious belief. You get rid of that, and then it's every man for himself. It's every man with his truth. And if there's lies that are exposed, well, they're just little mistakes. They can be fixed. You can still trust the human heart. This is what people believe. And yet God says, if you forget me, you can read this in Hosea 4. He says, if you forget me, then I'll forget your children. You'll end up cut off from God, cut off from the blessings. We're coming into a time of great trouble. Trouble like this world has never, ever seen. Jeremiah 30 describes this. It's discussing Israel and Judah. In other words, Ephraim and Manasseh and little Judah in the Middle East. But it's primarily Jacob, Ephraim and Manasseh, that runs into the most trouble. Verse 7 says, alas, for that day is great. This is Jeremiah 30 in verse 7. That day is great so that none is like it. It's even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. Jacob's trouble means trouble for the United States and Britain. It's the worst trouble our nations have ever experienced. It culminates in the Great Tribulation, the Day of the Lord, and of course the return of Jesus Christ to his throne in Jerusalem. This is what our nations need to wake up to, the reality of these prophecies as they unfold step by step, just like Britain being on the outside of the EU. It's all prophesied. Part of that keynote prophecy Mr. Armstrong spoke about for decades, the final formation of the Holy Roman Empire. Britain's not going to be part of it. Britain's going to be a target for that empire. And so will be the United States. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some more listener feedback from the last couple of days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
First comment here comes from one of you listeners that says, thanks for sharing the listener feedback. So there you go, appreciative of hearing the feedback from all of you. Here's one from a listener in Oklahoma. It says, I appreciated the program on the dictators of this world. When I visited Africa a few months ago, I was reminded of the destructive power that these tyrants wield. That stood out to me. Another thing that stood out to me was this. There certainly wasn't any sort of temporary resurgence in these countries. Obviously, some non-Israelite nations are actually riding the Trump tide and are perhaps experiencing some sort of resurgence. And carnally, I really wanted to see this in the nations I visited, especially an economic resurgence, but I didn't. Then I started thinking more about the why of 2 Kings 14 resurgence, God's compassion, God's plans for advancing his work, and so on. The more I thought about Gentile dictators and 2 Kings 14, 26, and 27, and the chief nations of Israel, the more I started thinking more about Zechariah 6. Long story short, does not Satan essentially have the leaders of some of these Gentile nations completely in the bag? Were it not for America, Britain, and Israel, who could really stop nations like China, Russia, and Iran from doing anything they want? So by saving Israel temporarily, isn't he also indirectly saving the whole world temporarily? Is it not one of the reasons why Satan is attacking the U.S. so much? Because the U.S. is perhaps the only power that would not tolerate too much nonsense from some of the more powerful global players. He says the U.S. has a 200-year-old constitution that actually works by the many standards. The global average lifespan of a national constitution is just 17 years. And then finally he writes, and if these other nations are already in the bag, does that also help explain the sudden destruction that is soon coming? That comes from a listener in Oklahoma. Another one here, actually, from Oklahoma, says, just finished listening to the latest program, and something you said just jumped out at me. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but you said, we have a lot to prepare for, and if right now we are in a kind of a wilderness years, not that well known, we also know that that will change. So what are we doing right now to prepare for what's ahead? I have to say, he says, this could be one of the most important questions you have asked on the show. Another one here, I'm not sure where this one comes from, but it says, whereas impeachment was meant to be used as a protective tool, what a dangerous weapon it is, or it has instead been turned into, being stolen by hands of a lawless party, of a lawless Congress, bent out of shape to inflict harm rather than good. Impeachment was to guard the office of president, to guarantee that legal and moral purity be kept in that office, not for guaranteeing a certain political party to be kept in that office, or for keeping a certain circle of individuals in power. It was for keeping the office and keeping it clean. A few other ones here. It says, that's it. America's liberal left's continuous repetition of their hypocrisies is much like Mr. Fleury's reference in the latest Key of David. Hitler's statement that if you tell a lie and keep lying over and over, people will begin to lose resistance to that lie. It says that's exactly what the anti-Trump deep state group is doing, just committing hypocrisy after hypocrisy and then acting as if it's nothing. Another one says it's really hard to grasp how this nation has turned its back on God and how fast Bible prophecy is exploding on the world. Another one here says, I remember something that Mr. Armstrong wrote, any old fish can float downstream. It takes a live one to swim up. Finally, a short one here. This is from the live broadcast yesterday. It says, good morning. Love the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the show, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you Monday.